Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, February 10th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the biggest movie trailers from the Super Bowl and the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office expert, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, how was your Super Bowl experience before we get into the trailers themselves?
As one of the, I'm going to guess, relatively few people at SlashFilm.com who actually cares about the NFL, this was the most boring of all possible outcomes for the Super Bowl in terms of the teams that got in. And, you know, the Eagles blew out the Chiefs, so it was kind of a boring game. Turned into a relaxing night, but not usually what I want from a Super Bowl, but it was fine, I guess.
Okay. All right. So I thought it was kind of a weak night for movie trailers at the Super Bowl. I remember there are some years, I think the Fast and Furious 6 trailer dropped at a Super Bowl where a car comes bursting out of the nose of a plane. And that just might be the peak for me. Like, I don't know if there's going to be a better Super Bowl trailer experience just in terms of things that I'm personally interested in and the surprise factor and all of that. I mean, of course, you go back to like whatever, 1996 or something, and like the Independence Day trailer, I think, or a version of it debuted at the Super Bowl when they blew up the White House. And that was like a huge deal. But that was like a long time ago. I'm talking about sort of in the more modern era, compared to more recent years. I thought this year was not really great in terms of movie trailers at the Super Bowl, but we're going to run through, I think we have six trailers here that I just wanted to touch on real quick before we get into some box office stuff. So Jurassic World Rebirth had a trailer that was basically a shortened version of the full trailer that was already released a few days before the Super Bowl. This is a weird situation because Jacob and I pre-recorded tomorrow's podcast episode late last week, and we talk in depth about the Jurassic World Rebirth trailer there, so I don't want to like spoil too much of tomorrow's episode, but I know you're a huge Jurassic fan, Ryan, and you were like massively looking forward to this movie. So what did you think about the trailer that we saw? I guess either the Super Bowl version or the full trailer, either one.
Yeah, like you said, the Super Bowl version was truncated. I am psychotic enough where I recognized like the three very short shots that were in the Super Bowl trailer that were not in the main trailer. Nothing of note, really, just like a different shot of Scarlett in a couple of situations. But when this trailer dropped last week, like I was losing my mind, and you had to sort of pop into our Slack and be like, well, I'm glad you're able to keep yourself calm, Ryan, because if this goes wrong, you know, obviously, or, you know, because it was, we've talked about this a lot, and you know, because it was Gareth Edwards, because David Koepp was coming back, because of that Vanity Fair piece that dropped and had a bunch of information, apparently they've been developing this for a while. It wasn't like a rush thing. It all sounded good, and then the trailer delivered everything that I really wanted. A lot of people have had issues with like the sort of quippy lines in the trailer, and I agree that I don't love those, but everything else really landed for me. I was truly like over the moon last week, and I'm so unbelievably excited about this. I think the dinosaurs look cool. I love the concept. I like that they've made the world smaller again. I like that it's all new dinosaurs. Like, even though it's a T-Rex, it's not the T-Rex we've seen before, because it's all like, I love that it's like at the original Jurassic Park research facility, and there's been some confusion about that. But it's, you know, it's not Site B, it's not Isla Sorna. It's a completely new place we haven't been before. So conceptually, I love a lot of that. And I like that it feels a little bit darker and more horrific. Yeah, I don't know. Gareth Edwards had this great quote about the original Jurassic Park being like a horror movie in the witness protection program. And he had just the perfect read on it to me as far as like what this should be. So I'm, as of right now, my hopes are deliriously high. I wish they weren't, but they are. I don't know what your reaction to it was. I was too blind with excitement to really care about what anybody else thought last week. I don't know where you're at with it, but
I'll save most of my response for tomorrow's episode of the show because we just pre-recorded that.
Sure.
I will say that Mahershala Ali is, I don't think we talked about him on tomorrow's episode. And in that Vanity Fair piece that you alluded to that came out right before the footage debuted compared him to Quint from Jaws. And I definitely got that vibe from him in this trailer. And it just looks like he's having a total blast. And I love Mahershala in like I'm having fun mode. So I think I'm really going to absolutely enjoy that part of the movie, if nothing else. And I hope that there's enough for me to enjoy a lot more of the movie than just that. But man, like that seems like a pretty cool foundation to build on there. So you mentioned the quippiness, and that also carried over to Thunderbolts asterisk. I'm not really sure. That asterisk is definitely part of the title officially. I'm not going to say it every time we talk about this movie, but I was wondering what your read on that trailer was, because I watched the Super Bowl as it was happening and there was a truncated version of that trailer and I was not really super impressed with it in real time watching it. And then preparing for this episode, I went to our article at Slash Film just to refresh my mind and clicked play on the trailer. It was much longer. It was like a 2.5 minute trailer. And I was not aware that they had released like a full thing for this movie. And the full trailer is much, much better in my view than just the little version that we got on the actual broadcast itself. So what did you think about this one?
So I actually did the same. I actually watched the truncated version, but I have this thing where like Thunderbolts, I love so much. Like there was a comic run that I read that I loved with Thunderbolts, and I just don't know that they're going to be able to get people to buy into this, but like I love Sentry as a character and I'm so excited that he's in this. I sort of like the team they put together. I like the vibe of it. Sebastian Stan seems tired. That's the only thing. He's usually there. Like he's really there. I don't know if it's just the way the trailers have been cut and stuff. He just doesn't seem, maybe it's just like Bucky at this point. I'm not really sure, but he seems a bit worn out. Is that just me? Does Bucky feel different here? Like, is that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it very well could be just a case of how they're cutting this, but they're definitely leaning on him right now in the archetype of the put upon guy who is trying to put the team together and is exhausted because he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders type of thing. Yeah. So
I think it looks like a lot of fun. It's hard for my business brain not to kick in, and I don't know what they're selling to people who no longer consider Marvel to be a must-see thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Florence Pugh has more star power than she gets credit for. And I think David Harbour to a degree as well. But I'm not so sure that, I don't know, like Avengers Tower is back. That's cool. But is that like enough to get people? I'm very curious to see how this all shakes out. But I'm excited for this one on a personal level. But I'm trying to keep my optimism cautious with Marvel at this point. So I'm trying not to get too pumped.
Yeah, that's a wise move, definitely. You mentioned the Sentry character. Is that the character that we see in this who appears to be a villain who's kind of like flying around? We never really get like a clear look at him, and he seems to be like turning people into black shadows or something. And it reminded me a little bit of like Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds, where the alien creatures just dissolve people, you know, into nothing, basically.
Yes, that is. So Lewis Pullman's character is... he's being billed as a guy named Bob from the first trailer, but ultimately that is the person who is Sentry. So Sentry is like this Superman level powerful character, but he has like a version of like multiple personality disorder. And it makes the whole thing very fascinating. And he kind of has like trouble controlling the sort of this entity inside of him that makes him this super powerful, like godlike character. Yeah, it's a really neat idea. I've read, I got introduced to Sentry through this Dark Avengers run that I really liked, and then where there's like an individual Sentry, you know, series that's really, but he's a fascinating character, and I like the idea of these non-powered people having to kind of go try to take this guy down. And I don't know, it seems kind of fun to me, but I'm in the bag for that character, and I really hope that that pays off, because I like, with the character, it makes sense that you have a guy like Lewis Pullman, the sort of unsuspecting guy, bringing this super powerful, like, potential, you know, I guess they're sort of portraying him as, I don't know if it's outright evil as it is, like, maybe he's just losing control, but I think it's a good casting for that. It was originally going to be Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead, and then he had to back out. But I like the cast. So I don't know. I'm hopeful there. But yeah, to answer your original question, yes, Ben, that is who that is.
Okay. No, that was the answer I was looking for. I wanted some context on that. All right. So I wanted to talk about a 1-2 punch of trailers for things that I've talked about on the show before that I just don't think need to exist personally. But it seems like the money is there, so of course they're going to exist, which is the live action version of How to Train Your Dragon and the live action version of Lilo and Stitch, both of which feature CG recreations of these animated characters that look almost identical to the versions that we've already gotten in the existing movies. And my thoughts on How to Train Your Dragon have not changed whatsoever, which is just, I just am so baffled at, on one level, that the creative decision to come back for this. So I don't need to rehash that all over again. It's very obvious why they're making this movie, why they're pulling a Disney and looking at what Disney has done with its live action adaptations. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on that. At least the Lilo and Stitch trailer, I thought, was a little creative by like creating something specific to the Super Bowl and giving you a sense of the Stitch character and not necessarily just showing you sort of beat for beat stuff. I'm sure that's going to come later, but just in terms of like introducing this maybe to the wider world who missed the teaser or whatever, I thought at least there was some creativity in the Lilo and Stitch one. Not that I'm looking forward to that version of that movie anyway, but do you have any thoughts on either of these, Ryan?
We talked about this a little bit last time, the How to Train Your Dragon, I don't really have an investment in. I didn't like love that movie when it came out. So I know a lot of people do have a ton of affection for it. It looks beat for beat to be the same movie. Like it, not even like that there's some difference in adapting it. It looks like those are the beats that they are hitting. And so I'm still fascinated by Dean DeBlois coming back and saying like, okay, they're going to make this with or without me. I'd rather be the guy to steer the ship. So that sort of interests me. But what I'm interested in is Disney's decision to what they did and didn't put money behind. And like, for example, they have Snow White coming up in March. So they decided it was worth spending money on Lilo and Stitch and not Snow White. They decided it was worth spending money on Thunderbolts and not Captain America. But the Lilo and Stitch one is the one that fascinates me, because I think they have a huge hit there. And they must have some generational data that suggests like Lilo and Stitch is a big, big winner as far as like in their library, as far as people that grew up in the 90s, early 2000s, whatever, like that is one of their movies now. That's one of their Disney movies. I'm starting to see that as a movie that might make a lot more money than we think it's going to make. I think that that's also one that has the opportunity to sort of like, whether or not you view the idea as like creatively interesting, I think the idea that's one where you could maybe do something in live action where you could add something to the story, you could add something to it. I'm curious about that one, whether or not I think it's anything other than a money grab. I don't know, but I'm my curiosity has been struck.
Okay, so the last two trailers that I wanted to mention here, Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning and F1. F1, pretty short. I think it's only 35 seconds or something, and there's not a ton of footage that we didn't already see in the first teaser. There's a little bit, but it's very much a teaser, like series of shots instead of something that tries to establish a narrative, you know, that kind of thing. It's more just giving you the vibes than the story at all. And then Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning is kind of the same, honestly. It's pretty short, and there's already been a trailer that has this sort of portentous narration over it, and this one does a little bit and just kind of gives you a hint of the action to come. So I'm excited about both of these movies. I hope Final Reckoning ends up being a little bit better than Dead Reckoning. I'm still questioning whether or not this is actually going to be the last Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie, even though the marketing campaign seems to be built around him saying, "You've got to trust me one last time," in this very direct way. And it seems like this very one-to-one explanation where he is in a meta way talking to the audience about like, hey, this is the last one. And whether or not they're just using that as a marketing tactic remains to be seen. But I'm very impressed by the stunts and all that in both of these trailers. So what do you think about either of these, Ryan?
I think the marketing for Final Reckoning is good. I like those trailers. I like what they're trying to set up. I'm with you, but I do think that there's going to be a passing of the baton. I wouldn't be shocked if like the direction they go is Ethan Hunt becomes like the head of the organization or whatever, and takes on more of like an Alec Baldwin type role where he's kind of just like in a few scenes. And then like, it's like Glenn Powell or somebody is like the, you know, the new Ethan Hunt, not Ethan Hunt, but you know what I mean? Like he's the new guy and you know, I don't know. But I do think I don't think I could see Tom Cruise pulling that much of a bait and switch. Like he's been with this for too long. I think if he's saying it's like the final one in this sense, I think that that's probably somewhat honest, which is a good marketing tactic. I liked Dead Reckoning. If it's at least as good as that, I'll be happy. F1 is the one that fascinates me. I think it looks awesome. But again, another one of the business thing can't leave my mind, where I know they had to reshoot an enormous amount of that movie because of the strikes and because of other things. And because of that, my understanding is that all the brand deals they had with the previous season of F1 went out the window. So they had to reshoot a bunch of the movie with the new sponsors and stuff, which cost a fortune. And like, so this is an Apple movie too. So like, this is really a test for them of like, okay, what are we willing to bear as far as like investment and return on that investment goes? You know, can they sell it as Top Gun Maverick for cars? It looks cool. But I'd be fascinated to see how this one shakes out. But it looks really good and it does look like it's going to earn its big screen reputation. So I'm fascinated to see how that one goes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that about reshooting because of the brand deals. And I wonder if that's not a story that you hear every day. So I wonder if Apple might be a little willing to be forgiving for a movie like this to not, if it doesn't perform up to the sky high expectations that they have, I wonder if they might not judge the movie as harshly against the budget because they know that the strike caused this thing to happen that was out of the filmmaker's hands. So I wonder if that's not necessarily going to be one of those instances where they're like, hey, just because this movie didn't perform the way it's going to, or the way that we wanted it to, that means we're not going to invest in, you know, big screen potential blockbusters like this anymore.
Yeah. And I might be getting some of these details screwed up, but I know my understanding is that it was a tremendously expensive movie anyway, you know, like a $200+ million dollar. And then, again, please do. This is my recollection, what I've heard. Obviously, none of these final numbers have come out. The number that I heard was in the $300 million range. So we're talking like remarkably expensive. So I think you're right in the sense that like Apple's not going to blame the strikes on Brad Pitt or Kaczynski or any of these guys. But it was an expensive movie to begin with. You know what I mean? So I think it sort of then it stacks. But we'll see. Yeah. I don't know if it can do. If they can sort of get that Top Gun buzz behind it, it might be able to make enough money to be okay. But that's what I'm curious about. Can they effectively sell this to people? And to me, like, they've already sold me a ticket. It looks good. Is everyone else follow suit? I do not know.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll come back and get into some box office discussion.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
with new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tap. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Save big money on your next upgrade now at Menards. Some things never go out of style, like tile from Mohawk. You can count on the durability, easy maintenance, and timeless beauty of tile. With over 350 ceramic, porcelain, mosaic, and glass tiles to choose from, Mohawk Tile provides long-lasting charm in any space. Visit the store and Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on in our weekly flyer.
Save big money at Menards.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All right, shout out to Zach from East Central Wisconsin, who wrote in to us on January 29th and lightly chastised you and I, Ryan, for being pretty dismissive of Dogman, seemingly out of ignorance to the property. I'm going to read a little bit from Zach's email. I'm a childless man-child in his mid-30s who follows the comics and graphic novels industry, so my knowledge comes from that world where Dogman is an absolute juggernaut. In any year-end sales data breakdown for graphic novels, Dogman's now 12 volumes are often the majority of the top 20, outselling by large magnitudes the most storied franchises in that space, like Spider-Man, Batman, and Watchmen. And then skipping ahead in his email, he says, although I can't speak to the movie's quality, this movie has a gigantic built-in audience that, if it hits, will most likely result in a moderate to major success. So I wanted to ask you, Ryan, about a couple of notable stories from 2 weekends ago, since we didn't have a box office episode last week, and to see whether Zach's prediction was correct about Dogman. So any stories from 2 weeks ago that you think we need to catch up on here?
Yeah, so I think that... Yeah, let's go 2 weeks ago and we'll talk about the thing that doesn't have a lot of, well, because these are two both connected to, because as we know, the opening weekend is only just part of the story, right? So let's talk about this. So Dogman, to Zach's point, did quite well for itself last weekend. It made $36 million, top the box office domestically, solid, seemingly solid, you know, up front. Did some business overseas. So, okay, that's fine. So we'll talk about that more in a second. It looked up front, looked good. And then the other big one last weekend was Companion, the Sophie Thatcher led sci-fi horror flick. That did well as well, did $9.3 million, not initially a huge breakout hit, but, you know, seemingly did okay. You know, a $10 million budget, decent marketing campaign. So as long as it didn't fall off a cliff, it would probably be okay. Well, let's fast forward to this weekend. Super Bowl weekend, historically not a big movie going weekend at all, and that proved true. So this is where things get tricky for Dogman, is that Dogman did maintain the number one spot at the box office, but it dropped 62%.
Wow.
So it made just $13.7 million. My understanding is that is the biggest drop ever for a DreamWorks animated film in its second weekend. So... you know, it's sitting at 54 million domestic, 54.1 to be exact, and it's made 11.9 overseas, so it's 66 million worldwide. You know, even a cheap animated movie needs a lot more than that to be able to sort of break even. So, you know, the audience was there. It'll probably do well on streaming or whatever, and there's obviously going to be a lot of tie-in merch that people care about, so it'll probably make its money overall. Like, this, the investment will still be worth it, but as far as a pure movie play goes, it's seemingly not there.
Okay.
And then the other one, again, Companion, seemed okay out the gate, but because of that, you know, not huge opening, it needed to maintain a little bit. It didn't. Companion dropped 67.5% this weekend, made just $3.02 million for less than $1,000 per screen average. It's not going to last really much longer. It's going to shed screens like crazy this upcoming weekend. And so it's done 15.4 domestic and 11.2 internationally. So, you know, it's coming up on 27 million worldwide. Again, for a $10 million movie, that's going to be fine ultimately, but it's not really like the breakout hit that it maybe could have been. Those are the two movies from last weekend where the narrative kind of changed for them a lot this weekend.
That's a bummer. I hope that maybe people might be, like you said, focused on the Super Bowl this weekend, maybe just didn't get around to seeing Companion on the opening weekend, and maybe they will catch up with it while the film is still in theaters, because we talked about it on the show, but it's just a really, really fun movie, and I hope people get around to it. But
yeah, I think they will. At this point, it could finish with around 40 worldwide, somewhere between 40, 45, let's call it. That's enough for Warner Brothers to be happy, you know, because again, it was a minimal investment. It'll do well on VOD, Max, whatever. It'll be fine. It's just that, you know, it would have been nice to see it break out a little more, is all.
Yeah. Okay. So why don't you run through the top 10 movies at the domestic box office from this past weekend, just a couple days ago?
Yeah, will do. So as we discussed, Dogman topped the charts with $13.7 million. Very low for, you know, any weekend, but that's kind of how the Super Bowl tends to go. Number two, we had a newcomer in the form of Heart, is a rom-com slasher that we talked about on the podcast last week. Did $8.5 million. Pretty solid business there for Sony's latest. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Number three, we had Love Hurts, sort of romantic action film of sorts that stars Ki-Hui Kwan in the lead role. It made $5.8 million, not very good in the opening weekend there. We'll talk more about that in a minute as well. Number four, we had Mufasa the Lion King in its eighth weekend with $3.9 million, dropping just 38%. That has become a staggering success from its holds. That movie is now at $671 million worldwide after having just a $35 million domestic opening. That is insane. At number five, we have Companion with $3 million, as discussed. At number six, we have One of Them Days, a quiet success for Sony here. The little comedy that could has now made just shy of $40 million domestically with very little marketing campaign, all word of mouth there. That is incredible. And number seven, we had a documentary called Becoming Led Zeppelin with $2.6 million on just 369 screens for one of the best per screen averages of the entire weekend. And number eight, we had Flight Risk with $2.6 million in its third weekend. That one is just barely eked past $25 million domestically, coming up on $35 million worldwide. Number nine, we had Sonic the Hedgehog 3 still hanging in its eighth weekend with another $1.7 million. That one is at $472 million worldwide, and it is now the highest grossing live action video game movie of all time. Trailing only the Super Mario Brothers movie in terms of video game movies overall, but it is a distant second. Number 10, rounding out the list, is Moana 2 in its 11th weekend with $1.5 million. As it takes its last gasps, that movie is at $1.03 billion worldwide. Good for you, Disney.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned Heart, Eyes, and Love Hurts. Let's talk about those. What do you got?
What's interesting here is both of these movies had $18 million budgets, both of which were kind of playing with, you know, going for the Valentine's Day crowd while blending with a genre of sorts. It worked out better for Hard Eyes. This was directed by Josh Rubin. It was met with pretty good reviews. So an $8.5 million start on an $18 million budget is... It keeps it in the black, right? It keeps it in the possibility to do well. And I think that if you look at next weekend when you have Captain America Brave New World and Paddington in Peru coming out, for your Valentine's Day crowd, Hard Eyes is probably going to be the better option there. So I think that it has a chance to hold over. It's going to need help, obviously, to break even on that $18 million budget, but it's off to an okay start. I think reviews and word of mouth are going to get that one somewhere. On the flip side, you've got Love Hurts. Same budget, again, $18 million, just $5.8 million, though, with so-so to bad reviews. So it's interesting how this line between success and failure can be really thin for a movie like this, right? For these low mid-budget movies where that extra $3 million, a little under $3 million for Hard Eyes is maybe going to make the difference there in terms of its holdover, in terms of what it can actually do in the coming weeks. And, you know, where Love Hurts is probably going to fall like a brick, Hard Eyes at least has a chance to hold okay next weekend. And it's just interesting that, you know, it's kind of a tale of two movies there. And again, next weekend, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, you've got two, I mean, I don't want to call Paddington in Peru a juggernaut, but it's done a huge amount of money overseas already. So, you know, that might actually come in for a decent chunk of business. And, you know, we'll have to see how these movies can hold. But, you know, this is what happens on Super Bowl weekend. You get a couple movies that take a shot and, you know, we'll see how it goes. But, I'm hopeful for Hard Eyes here. I haven't seen Love Hurts, but,
it's real bad, Ryan.
Yeah, I was gonna. I didn't want to put words in your mouth, but you had said that it was not good.
It's so bad. I'm so sorry to everyone who worked on the movie, but it just did not come together at all. It was a huge whiff for me. But yeah, sometimes that happens. What are you gonna do? But okay, so we're coming to the end of this episode. Before we wrap up, though, you and I were talking about something on Slack that I just had no idea about. And I think this is really important for our audience to know. So tell me about this box office behemoth that's happening over in China right now.
Yeah. So anyone who pays attention to box office at all, this is the Super Bowl for box. This is like someone, you know, the underdog winning in the playoffs. Like, right. This is something we're all talking about. So there's a movie called Ni Za 2, which is an animated film. It is a sequel to a 2019 movie. It is also a movie most of you probably haven't heard of. Well, it has made $1.08 billion in China alone, and it came out 2 weeks ago. It is now the first movie ever to make more than $1 billion in a single country. It passed Star Wars The Force Awakens for the highest total for a movie in a single country. It made $250.6 million in China this past weekend. And mind you, this is its second weekend. It is now expected to make close to $2 billion, if not more than $2 billion in China alone. It is assured pretty much at this point to make at least $1.67 billion, which would put it past 2019's The Lion King to make it the only Chinese movie in the top 10 all time at the box office. It is quite possibly going to get much higher than that and could contest Avengers Infinity War to get into like the top seven. And again, almost all of that is going to be coming from China alone. This has happened with these Chinese blockbusters from time to time. You have a movie like Wolf Warrior 2, 2017, made like $870 million worldwide, less than $3 million of that came from US audiences. And you had a few other scattered markets around the world like that. That's pretty much it. This is why, in the aftermath of the pandemic, China started having movies like The Battle of Lake Changjin, which made $900 million in China and basically barely made a dime anywhere else in the world. This is why they stopped prioritizing Hollywood releases, because they can do these homegrown hits. And it's fascinating that you're going to have a movie like this that is going to absolutely shatter global records, but is pretty much just a movie that's going to play for that one country for the most part. You know, I'm not saying it won't make money somewhere else, but I'm saying that, you know, it's kind of mostly not going to play, you know, most people aren't going to see it elsewhere in the world. So it's just utterly fascinating to me. Like what this movie is doing is just bonkers. It's unprecedented. I mean, you know, the China population, you know, there's a lot of people there, which is why this can do this. But I mean, you can't make $1 billion in two weekends unless you become a hilarious cultural moment. You know, it's so, I just can't emphasize how big this movie is and how big it's going to be. So, you know, even though this is a movie that, you know, most of the people listening to this probably aren't thinking about, may not see at all, like it is getting a US release this week, but again, it's going to be relatively minimal, right? So it's just fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. And yeah, we could be looking at just the eighth movie in history to cross the $2 billion mark. But normally that requires an enormous global effort. And in this case, pretty much just China. So fascinating stuff.
Wow. There. Yeah. I wonder how long it's going to take before the global top 10 is mostly comprised of Chinese movies, because this is the first movie that's doing this from that country. But it's certainly not going to be the last, because China spent years and years essentially learning from Hollywood how to make these blockbusters. And like you said, they basically turned the spigot off on Hollywood blockbusters a handful of years ago and have just been making their own stuff for the most part and not importing as many Hollywood movies and all of that, and cultivating a real cinephile audience in China, people who love movies and get into the habit of doing that and going and paying to see movies in theaters. And this seems like not the logical end point, but like the maybe the start of the next era of that or something. And I wonder if it's only going to be whatever, 10 years or something before the Chinese market has, I don't know what you want to say, I guess like has equaled or overtaken the American market when it comes to the all-time top 10. That's just really an interesting trajectory for us to keep our eye on, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a touch of a leap, right? Like to sort of like, you know, predict that. But I do think that, like, let's say if Nisa 3 is inevitable, does that become an even bigger cultural thing in the way that, like, you know, you had Avengers Infinity War to Avengers Endgame? And like, can they do this effectively with other movies? And, you know, can they start cracking that global top 10 just with homegrown hits? And it's going to be fascinating to see. Now, the only thing I will say is ultimately, if you look at the global box office and the global health of that marketplace, this is a good thing. I know it's complicated for Hollywood. I know it's complicated in some ways, but then these international hits do play elsewhere in the world. You do get some audience there. It does generate some interest. We see this all the time with these Indian imports that play on like 600 screens and make a few million dollars and boost some, you know, so you need more movies, you need more global interest. And I do think the net is good for the global box office here. And what we do want to see is that going up in 2025 and 2026. So I do think this is really good. You know, as far as obviously not pure good, and you know, there is some complication there in terms of, yes, it's mostly just China. Yes, it does potentially harm Hollywood releases down the road, and you know, some of these other things. But I think the net there is good. So that's my big takeaway. But fascinating stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about everything that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.